The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Okay, before I get to The Big Lead, I just have to comment on something in the newscast there. I do not understand this Capital One hacker. I don't understand why everybody in the media thinks they have to call Paige Thompson a woman, why we have to use female pronouns. This person's being held in a male jail. And it's, but we're so consumed with political correctness. And this person wanted to go to a European country that had assisted suicide. And everybody says, oh, they're nuts. They were tweeting at Donald Trump asking to be deported. Oh, this person's nuts. This person's a man who claims he's a woman. Oh, we all have to accept that and repeat it. But this person's being held in a men's incarceration center. So why does everybody, and I'm looking at every single story in the media that calls this person a woman. It makes no sense when they're being held in a men's jail for the Capital One hack. But we are consumed, and everybody thinks that we all have to use their chosen pronoun when every other aspect of their life, they seem to be crazy. But this is the one that we have to accept as sane and at face value. You know what's really nuts? How the media treats stuff like this. Oh, my goodness. All right. With that as mere prelude, let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
I've got a crazy exclusive story for you, and I'm going to talk to the general manager of this Ballard shipyard at 12:30 this afternoon, but I'll tell you just briefly what happened. A presumed drug vagrant on 24th and Shilshol in Ballard stole a hard hat. And there are a bunch of Seattle DOT crews and all kinds of crews. They're digging a big hole by the Yankee Diner there on 24th and Shilshol. And they believe that this woman stole a hard hat. And then she walked into the Pacific Fisherman Shipyard that's right there. And everybody saw somebody wearing a hard hat. And it seemed like, well, they must belong here. Well, that's when she went to the wheelhouse of a 123-foot, 400-ton Alaska king crab vessel that was at this shipyard to have some work done on it. And there were some of the shipyard workers. They were down in the engine room, and all of a sudden they hear somebody's trying to turn over the engine. And it's this drug vagrant who stole a hard hat to get in there. And as the general manager, he sent a letter to the Seattle City prosecutor, and he CC'd me. And he said if she had been able to successfully commandeer this gigantic diesel crab boat, if she had gone just a couple of minutes down the cut there to the Ballard locks, she could have rammed the dam between the cut that goes to Lake Washington and Puget Sound, and she could have drained Lake Washington by ramming through that dam. And what he said is, how is this any different from the person who stole the Victoria Clipper? Remember that? And damaged a bunch of other boats. Or the guy who stole that Horizon airplane and flew loop-de-loops over Puget Sound before crashing it into an island, killing himself. How is it any different? Well, here's the difference. In this case, it was a drug vagrant. And so what happened? She was arrested on two felony counts, but immediately released within 24 hours. And is back on the streets today. And this is right after we find out about the meth head with the pitchfork who tried to murder a woman, gets charged with assault when it could have been attempted murder. But it's part of that catch-and-release program. So anyway, you're going to hear details. Nobody else knows about this story, but you're going to hear the details coming up at 12:30 about how we presume it's a drug addict, homeless woman, tried to commandeer a huge Alaska king crab vessel at the shipyard in Ballard. It's an amazing story, and what's amazing is that she's free within 24 hours. And back on the streets, and how our prosecutors do not take crime seriously if they are committed by drug addicts. We have two sets of justice in the Puget Sound region. One for people who don't use drugs and own a house or rent a house and actually have something to live for. And I'm not saying that drug addicts don't have anything to live for. Don't misinterpret. I'm talking about in material goods. If you have something that they can go after, then they will. If you are a drug addict, the option is to lock them up because, you know, you can't find them. But instead, they just let them go. Try to steal a ship? No big deal. Why do we care? You will hear more details coming up at 12:30 this afternoon. Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top story.
I find this absolutely amazing. The CEO of Sound Transit, as you know, I believe that Sound Transit is the most criminal public agency in our nation's history. And I'm not engaging in hyperbole when I say that. There simply is no other public agency. And I always get these dopey supporters of Sound Transit. Hey, have you never heard of Halliburton? And I mean, they send me all this stuff. And no, when it comes to what it's cost taxpayers, no, Halliburton is dwarfed by Sound Transit. But also, it was a public company. It was... a publicly traded company, but private industry. I'm talking about government entities. There's never been a criminal entity like Sound Transit. Well, the CEO of Sound Transit, Peter Rogoff, he has said something absolutely mind-blowing. He seems to be, and understand, I am not endorsing this. But this is coming from the CEO of Sound Transit. He went to Twitter yesterday on his official Sound Transit CEO account. And he seems to be saying that if you have a problem with Sound Transit, if your car is worth $8,000 and they're taxing it based on $20,000 worth of value, and you're tired of the criminal acts of Sound Transit, the CEO of Sound Transit seems to be saying, again, did I mention I'm not endorsing this? Go and stand on a track in front of one of their trains if you're not happy with Sound Transit. Again, this is coming from the CEO. And again, not endorsed by Dory Monson or The Dory Monson Show or Bonneville Seattle. Let me explain. So downtown Seattle, there are a bunch of people who are sick and tired of all the gridlock. And so, you know, the streets have been taken over by bike lanes, bus lanes. It's impossible to drive around. And the vast majority of people still get around by car. And so there are a lot of people who drive in the bus lane to get around some of the traffic. Well, there were some activists in downtown Seattle. They have red flags, and they're standing in the bus lane in front of cars, and the cars are cheating. I'm not saying they're not, but these activists are standing in the middle of the street, and they were yelling at the bus lane violator cars to get out of the lane. So they're yelling, bus only lane. You're in the wrong lane, honey. Peter Rogoff, the CEO of Sound Transit, on his official Sound Transit CEO Twitter account, wrote, kudos to these heroes for mobility. Pity that they must take to the streets like this. So he is endorsing people, not only endorsing it, he is calling the women, or is women and men. He is calling them heroes for standing in the street in the middle of the bus lane in front of cars. Because the protesters, they don't like that the cars are using the bus lane. So I can only assume that to be consistent, if somebody doesn't like their car being taxed at twice its value by Sound Transit, I assume that Peter Rogoff would be equally okay, not only okay, but would call them heroes if somebody stands on a track in front of a Sound Transit train. I mean, he seems to love this kind of civil disobedience when it comes to mass transit issues. Now, again, I'm not telling anybody to go stand on a train track in front of a Sound Transit train, but the CEO of Sound Transit seems to be indicating that. And by the way, these protesters in the bus lanes, they are such a great example of what's wrong in this region. We've got all these people, and they're not passive-aggressive. These protesters are just aggressive. But these people who have decided that it's up to them to enforce the law, it's really odd to me that the leftists who are most in favor of, we must have bus mobility, the leftists are also the ones who have encouraged and in large part politically caused the drug vagrant problem around here. And they have no problem, the left, when people lay in the middle of the streets, gridlocking the entire region for 8 hours for the No Youth Jail movement. They have no problem with homeless vagrants, you know, attempting to steal crab boats and being released within 24 hours because we can't charge these people. But you got some business person who's late to a meeting and cuts in the bus lane. Let's get out of here. You must leave this bus lane. They think that they can enforce certain laws, but while they ignore all of the others. And you have the CEO of Sound Transit calling them heroes. Here's maybe even a more equivalent example. Sound Transit bus that's returning to base and doesn't have any passengers on it. If it's in the bus lane, could activists stand in front of that bus and tell it to move over into the general traffic lanes? Because that bus has no business taking up space on a bus lane? I mean, is that really what Sound Transit CEO is advocating? Anybody who has any problem with any law, go stand in the middle of traffic. Or, as I said, go stand on a train track. If you're frustrated with Sound Transit, their CEO seems to be endorsing you standing on a train track. And I find that to be a reprehensible suggestion that I do not endorse. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
Then speaking of insanity, I've got so much insanity. I've got so many stories in front of me every single day. So the Seattle City Council, they're trying to figure out how they can out whack job themselves. And they have been so wild-eyed crazed the last few years, it's tough for them to do something that's even more stupid than what they've done already. But this is near the top here. They have introduced and will pass a bill that will, they say, protect tenants from damage charges by their landlords if the damage happened because of domestic violence. Now, this is just another feel-good measure. But what it says is, okay, if you are in a domestic violence dispute and in the course of some physical altercation, somebody puts a hole in the sheetrock of your apartment, the people who are renting the apartment are responsible for the damages. And a landlord can hold the damage deposit until it's fixed. And if it doesn't get fixed, then they can evict the tenant and keep the damage deposit. Well, under this bill, if the tenant can prove that there was domestic violence in the apartment or the house, and that's what caused the damage, they would not be legally responsible for repairing the damage. Who would be? The owner of the building, the landlord. It's not that government, the landlords association said, look, if you're going to pass this law, then why don't you come up with some tax dollars and the city of Seattle can repair the damage. And they said, no, we're just going to put this on the landlord. You're going to have to pay for it yourself. How the heck is it the responsibility of a landlord, an apartment building owner, a homeowner who rents out, how is it their responsibility to repair the damage because the tenant got involved in a DV? Now, they said, well, a lot of times the victims are even more victimized by having to repair the damage. But it's not the landlord's fault. If there's holes in the wall or windows broken out or toilet fixtures smashed, it's not the fault of the landlord. It's another example of just the absolute contempt in the name of social justice. And because who would ever question not having domestic violence victims held responsible for damages? And all I'm saying is, I know the landlord shouldn't be responsible for those damages. And what this will do is two things. It will even, and by the way, in Seattle, you cannot take somebody's past criminal history into account when you rent to them. And so if somebody has 3-5 domestic violence incidents in their criminal record, you are legally prohibited from considering that when you rent out an apartment. There are only certain sex crimes that can be taken into account. So what does this do? Well, it means that landlords are going to find ways to not rent to people that they think are most likely prone to domestic violence. Those happen to be the poor disproportionately by a huge statistical margin. The poor are involved in most DV incidents. And so they're going to find ways to not rent to the poor. It's going to jack up the price of houses and apartments because another burden is placed on the landlords. And all the things that Seattle says they're concerned about will get worse because they have to do something that feels good. Never does good, just feels good. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, an exclusive you do not want to miss. How a presumed drug-addicted woman tried to steal a crab boat that could have resulted in the draining of Lake Washington. You'll hear it exclusively next on the Dory Monson Show. Well, yesterday we told you the story about the pitchfork attack in Ballard. A woman just going to the post office and all of a sudden a guy who had just shot up meth attacks her with a pitchfork. I still want to know why this is being charged as second-degree assault and not attempted murder, as he stabbed at her leg and she was able to use her purse as a shield. And then he started stabbing at her chest and neck before some good Samaritans came, chased the guy, and pinned him down for the cops. This is not the only thing that is happening with drug vagrants in Ballard. And there was an incident that no one has heard about that could have been unbelievably tragic. And I was alerted to this by Doug Dixon. He is a shipyard general manager there in Ballard. And he CC'd me a letter that he wrote to the prosecutor's office. And Doug joins us here on Cairo Radio. You're with Pacific Fisherman Shipyard and PFI Marine, right, Doug?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So tell my listeners, because I don't think anybody's heard about this story, what you and your co-workers witnessed a couple of weeks ago.
Well, yes. Unfortunately, one of our bookkeepers was handing out cigarettes to the indigents here on 24th Street in Ballard. And one of them apparently stole a hard hat. And she, looked like a worker coming in the yard, so nobody questioned her. She proceeded over to the King Crab vessel, the 122-footer called the North Sea, built by Marco back in the day, a big sister to the deadliest catches, Northwestern.
Okay.
Anyhow, it's in the yard here for repairs, and we had guys down in the engine room. Our union work crew was down doing a lot of work down in the engine room, and the engine starts to turn over. And, of course, they're working there, not on the engine, so it wasn't locked out or tagged out. But hearing the engine run was start was problematic. They ran up to the wheelhouse, and here's this lady. They chased her out, chased her down, chased her out to the arms of the cops. And they arrested her and for felony theft. And
I mean, this is crazy. I want to make sure I understand this. So she was just one of the drug vagrants. She steals a hard hat from one of your employees who's trying to do something maybe misguided but kind. And she uses that to get access to the wheelhouse of this big ship.
$12 million, 500-ton crabber, yeah.
I mean, that's particularly devious that she thought to steal the hard hat to get access to the shipyard there.
Yeah, and it wasn't one of our hard hats. We think it was from the Yankee Diner Construction, the Seattle Public Utilities, and King County is digging a big hole next to us.
Okay,
and they—it's one of the subcontractors or whatever.
Okay, and so what you were asking, because you say that the cops were able to arrest her right away after your employees chased her out.
Yeah, right.
So the letter you CC'd me, you were sending to the prosecutor's office. Tell everybody why you were writing to the prosecutors.
Well, she was let go after 24 hours. They didn't ask for any bail or anything. They just let her go, and don't you know, she gets arrested within another 24 hours, and apparently she is in the clink now, but if she wouldn't got arrested again...
She's back out.
Oh, no, she's back out, I just heard.
No.
if she wouldn't... she could have gone, you know, she's got the wherewithal to start a grab boat. She could have snuck in at night and done it, because we're not that secure here. And... I'm concerned she'd use it to ram the locks and drain Lake Washington.
Well, I mean, that's what you said. That, and you had a couple of pictures and stories that you linked up. But what you wrote to the prosecutor, if she had successfully started the vessel, her target could have been the Ballard locks. And you said using this ship as a battering ram to crash the gates could have drained the locks into Puget Sound. It's really that powerful a ship.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's got a massive Caterpillar 16-cylinder engine in it.
And you were comparing it to the guy who stole the Horizon Air flight that...
Absolutely no difference. Same thing.
Except
they both travel in a fluid. One is the air fluid and the other travels in the water fluid. No difference.
And the other difference is your
and one floats.
Your employers or employees were able to chase this woman down before she was able to get away in the boat. But that's in your mind, that's about the only difference.
That's the only difference, yeah.
So
you know, they were successful in crashing theirs, and the Victoria Clipper, when they stole the Victoria Clipper. They crashed that into two or three boats. They brought the Victoria Clipper to our shipyard afterwards, and it took us a week or two just to repair the damages.
So a disaster, you believe, because who knows what her intent was, but you think that she could have caused a tremendous environmental and economic disaster if she'd gotten away.
Absolutely, and the city of Seattle's policies are just to ignore that because she's homeless and because, you know, she needs her drugs.
You said that she was arrested on two felony counts, but
yes,
she was not
let go.
She was not charged.
I don't know. All I know is she's on the streets. Maybe she's charged with a felony, and they're going to prosecute her. But when we talked to the prosecutor's office, they had no record of it.
Well, and you used a phrase that I use all the time on the air. This catch and release program that we have for the drug vagrants. That's what they're doing.
Correct.
And
by looking at her, she had all the classic symptoms: the teeth, the hair, the complexion of a meth addicted person. So I may be falsely stating that she's a drug addict, but it sure looked like it.
So what was your reaction when you heard the story yesterday about the meth head with the pitchfork just a few blocks from you trying to stab a woman to death?
Well, it's no different than the shooting at the RVs that was before that, or the attacks that have been going down at this Ballard Commons. I mean, there was a knife attack. It just goes on and on and on. It's no different. What we're dealing with here is a major felony crime, utilizing heavy machinery as part of the tactics, and that's what we're worried about.
As the weapon. And then you also were talking about, you're seeing the homeless just set random fires right next to your place, too?
Oh, yeah. No, apparently there's a little turf battle or something going on down there on the railroad tracks, and they had a line of tents, and some guy got the gas, lit them up, and cops come down, or no, fire department comes down and says, well, you know, it's not our problem, it's a cop's problem. And cops come down, and what did they do, guys?
Nothing.
Didn't even arrest the guy when we showed him who the guy was. Yeah, we had multi-witnesses from both the King County SPU worksite and from our shipyard that identified the guy that did the arson. And, you know, I thought there was an arson division of the fire department. Maybe it's the police department. Maybe that's why the fire department passed it to the police department. I don't know. But the police department sure didn't care about the arson.
Yeah, what's crazy about all this, Doug, if some person living in a house in Ballard or in the suburbs, if this fall they decide to burn their leaf pile, they would get cited, they would be fined hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and yet these addicts who are setting fires that are burning plastics and far more dangerous material that goes up into our air and into our atmosphere, they don't even get charged with it. I mean, it's crazy.
What is really disconcerting is they took like 3 weeks or maybe a month or so to catch the arsonist, and a lot of resources, a lot of overtime, a lot of police and fire department arson activity on the Gaston Fremont lumber mill arsons. They finally got that guy.
Yeah.
Here they had the guy in their hands and didn't even decide to do anything with him, just not even catch him to release him.
Unbelievable.
Just look at him and say, yeah, there's an arsonist. Bye-bye.
Yeah. I've gotten pretty good at reading the tone in people's voices, Doug, and you sound like you have just had it with all of this.
Hey, I just bought a house in Bremerton. Go to Puget Sound Business Journal. It's the featured house of the month. I'm out of here.
I mean, it just makes me so sad to hear. I grew up just a few blocks from where your shipyard is, and it's unbelievable how the politicians have let the city just completely go to trash like this.
Completely is a good way to describe it.
All right.
I got to go, Dory.
No, I know.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Doug. All right, Doug. Okay, Doug Dixon, he is the general manager there at Pacific Fisherman Shipyard. So that's the story. Breaking it here. One of the homeless vagrants tried to steal a huge diesel ship, could have used it to create a tremendous environmental disaster, but the employees had to do what our law enforcement and our politicians refused to do, and that's keep the drug vagrants in check. Love to hear your thoughts. You can text me, 98973. That's 98973, the Online Trading Academy text line. And we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Down in Florida, 2 days ago, there was a big protest outside of a contractor who works with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And, oh, these protesters, they were filled with vitriol.
We know where all our children live. You have kids in You have kids in We know everything about you.
You hear that? They're threatening the children of people who work for this contractor. We know where your kids are. We know all about you. They say that they want to harm the kids. And as the director of this facility said, they've had a federal government contract for 15 years. What they're doing today is identical to what they did for 8 years when Barack Obama was president. But there weren't any protesters. There wasn't any television coverage. And why? Because none of these protesters or TV networks care about the issue. They think that it's a political weapon. So, but they're threatening the children of the people who work for this agency.
No GEO! No KKK! No Fascist USA!
The central thing that we mourn on Tisha B'Av is called Sinat Hinam.
Okay, and they're just crazy. So anyway, last night in San Antonio, somebody shot up an ICE facility. There are bullet holes that they found all over this ICE facility. So here you have, one of the presidential candidates, Kamala Harris, she was talking about ICE, and then former ICE director Tom Homan responded to that on Fox News.
This administration has directed DHS to conduct these raids as part of what I believe is this administration's campaign of terror, which is to make whole
campaign of terror. And then somebody shoots at a nice facility. They accuse the president of rhetoric that leads to violence. Here, again, their rhetoric is every bit as dangerous and damning, and it leads to violence. And yet they don't even care about that. None of this is sincere. It's all about politics.
Whole populations of people afraid to go to work. Children are afraid to go to school for fear that when they come home, their parents won't be there.
She claims these actions have petrified innocent families.
But, bottom line, Kamala Harris is wrong. This is, this is politics at its worst. The Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, uses the terms that ICE invaded these companies and terrorized immigrants. ICE is enforcing the laws that Congress enacted.
Yeah, that's all it is. They're enforcing existing laws. It's all politics. But notice inflammatory rhetoric that leads to violence. They're okay with that all of a sudden. Fast 15, it's next.